Hello, everyone, and welcome to The State of Sport Management, a podcast with Dr. Matthew Hummel coming from the University of Cincinnati in Cincinnati, Ohio. Here's this week's episode.
Well, welcome, everybody, to another episode of State of Sport Management. As some of you have saw, I posted on social media wanting to bring in a couple guests or maybe just one guest. Let's talk about conference costs. It's a constant discussion. I feel like even in the last couple of years, especially post-COVID, we've seen lots of discussion about it's expensive to go to places. It's expensive to attend places. And how can we make all this work? There's lots of people that get good travel funding, and there's lots of people that don't, or they're a doc student and they get very little. And so I wanted to make sure I brought in at least one. I ended up getting a couple, it looks like, but we're going to start off today with Dr. Nels Popp. Dr. Popp is at University of North Carolina, and he is an associate professor there in their sport management, or just sport administration.
We go by sport admin, but
yeah, there you go. I know the constant battle there, but with the sport administration program, and he's also their director of graduate studies at University of North Carolina. So Nels, thanks for joining us to talk a little bit about conference costs.
Hey, thanks, Matt. It's a question we get too from the conferences I've been involved in. So happy to kind of maybe clarify things a little bit for the listenership.
And Nels lets me continue my streak of bringing in Green Bay Packers fans, even though I'm a Bears fan. One of these days, I'll need to bring in some more Bears fans.
Smart move. I like it.
But yeah, so we've talked about rising conference costs, these challenges for doc students to fund attendance, maybe not seeing the increase in travel funds to overcome some of these costs. But Nels, I know you've been working with like the SMA conference, the Sport Marketing Association. You've kind of seen behind the curtain and seeing some of those costs. Let's talk a little bit about why are we seeing such a rise in conference costs? Let's start there. Not even just speaking SMA in general, but across the board, why are we seeing such a rise in conference costs?
It's a good question. I would say, I mean, there's a piece of it that's just societal. Inflation's up. I mean, everything is more expensive post-COVID, and travel and hotels and those kind of things are pricey too. I don't think higher ed has stayed at the pace of inflation. I think we'd all kind of agree with that. So I think it's a confluence of budgets not rising, but expenses going up that makes it feel like everything's way more expensive.
Yeah. And so we were talking a little bit at the top of the show here before recording about seeing some of those costs. I know you've been involved with SMA and kind of seeing some of the contracts or what those costs are. Let's walk through for a lot of people, because I think I can even say me included, we pay the registration costs. Maybe we see it go up. We get frustrated. We don't know where that money goes and what it fills. So give us a little bit of a background of like SMA size, so people know how big it is, what time of the year it is, and then kind of some of the stuff you're seeing on the background of where that money flows to.
Yeah, great question. And I'm glad I get a chance to talk about this, because 5 years ago, I had no idea either. And I was just curious if I could afford it. I went and I didn't even really think about it very much. Now that I've been involved with our executive board, and now I'm the assistant associate director for the conference, I've been able to see what these contracts look like and all the things that we go through. So I feel like I have a much better handle on it now. And that's what I was hoping to share maybe a little bit. So to give you an example, Sport Marketing Association, we're about 300 members. That's generally what we have at a conference for attendance, at that 300 range. That's been pretty steady a few years, you know, pre-pandemic. And then since the pandemic, we've been about at that number too. And that's probably 220 maybe our faculty members, and probably about 80 or so students, whether they're doctoral students, or we have an undergrad case competition, so that we have students that are part of our membership as well. But yeah, I'd love to talk a little bit about kind of what I've learned about acquiring the right property. I think, you know, probably 5-10 years ago, almost all of our associations, whether it's NAS or NASM or CSRI or CERLA or whatever, we were probably partnering with academic institutions to host a lot of these conferences. Maybe even some of them were held on campus locations, and some of them still are. I think Applied Sport Management still generally holds theirs on a campus. We actually made a move a few years ago with SMA to use a third party to help us secure locations and properties. So we use a third party.
So Nels, can you talk a little bit about that, like getting a contract and finding property? Like, how does that work? So you guys are looking at locations, or like, how did that work, and how does it work now?
Yeah, for sure. So in on our executive board, we'll kind of throw out some ideas of here's a place that I think people would like to go to. Here's where we have some really good connections. I think this sounds interesting. We haven't been to that location before. We'll discuss a lot of those pieces. And then we go to our third party. We use a company called Helms Briscoe, but I know there are other companies that do this. And we'll tell them, hey, look, here are three locations we're thinking about going to. Would you help us find which properties could actually host our event based on our specs? In the past, when we tried to do it ourselves or go through a university, every time you met with a, say, a hotel, you had to explain everything about your conference. And then they'd have to decide, is this a good fit for us or not? And we had very little leverage because if they said no, or want to charge a much higher price, we were stuck. By using this third party, one advantage we have is now that third party can say, hey, if we're not just doing this for this one conference, we have tons of clients. And if you want our future clients to come to your property, you should work with us and try to give us a better, you know, it helps a lot on the negotiation side to use this third party.
And Nels, is it fair to assume there's a cost for the third party, but you think overall it's a general save to have the third party work on your behalf?
We've loved it. Obviously they know a lot more and they have a lot more leverage. They understand the industry a lot better than we do. But the other thing that's been really enlightening for us is to get paid, that third party actually doesn't charge us. They charge the properties a percentage of all room nights.
Okay.
So they get, I don't know what it is. I saw at one point it's maybe like 2% or whatever of all rooms booked. If they go through, you know, this third party, then that third party gets paid that number of dollars.
Okay, interesting.
But the hotels are on board with it because it means that if they do a good job, they're likely to get more business through this third party for other events. So
And
that's one of the
now,
advantages.
going back to like SMA gets together, figures out, I mean, is there any science behind like where are we going to go in the future? I know when I was a student rep for NASM in the conference committee, there was some basic stuff of like, hey, let's not try to go to some place we went to recently. Let's try to also think about maybe what could be most interesting to our membership, or maybe it's easily drivable. Like, is there any like what components are going into putting down like a spot of like, let's go to this city or this area?
Yep. Well, we've talked about it at several of our meetings. We've actually done a lot of member surveys to try to figure out where people want to go. The problem is you never get a large majority saying one thing. If we go East Coast, we get West Coast schools saying, how come you never go to the West Coast? This is costing us a lot more to fly to the East Coast. If we do the opposite, we'll get the opposite. We've said, you know, do we want warm locations or does that not really matter? Do we want destinations that are, you know, major metro areas, or are people okay with smaller areas? I guess a couple of things we've tried to do is geographically move around the country to try to be fair to our membership. But the reality is there are more schools, there are far fewer schools, sport management programs in the West than there are probably in the Southeast or Midwest. So that's one challenge. Like, we want to be fair to everybody, but in reality, if we wanted to be the closest to the most number of our members, we'd always be on the East Coast. But that's just not fair to the West Coast. But we've kind of tracked like which events tend to draw the best. Probably Chicago was one of our best drawing conferences. And our conference is typically end of October, early November, which is not great weather in Chicago. We got lucky the year we were there. But it was close to the largest number of our members, so that was probably a big piece of it.
Nels, maybe it's because everybody loves Chicago is what you're
that's probably it too. Yeah, no, that certainly is a piece of it. And we've felt like we've tried to go to some attractive locations that people want to visit. We were at Tampa this year in Florida. I think a lot of people really enjoyed being there. We've been to Vegas. We've been to you know, we've tried to hit some pretty major metro areas, but it's tough. no matter where we go. Now, with SMA, one of our points of differentiation is we really try to tie in heavily with industry. So we try to go to markets that have major league teams or major sport organizations that we can partner with, that we can offer some really interesting experiences for our members when they attend. That's a piece of it.
Now,
yeah, is there a formula? No, because I think whatever we do, there's always going to be someone that is disadvantaged or not happy, and that's just how it is. One other piece I do want to mention: we do look at flights. We understand that's a large piece of the cost, and so we try to pick locations that are fairly accessible with direct flights. We've had a few locations where we chose not to go there because it's just hard to get in and out without paying a lot of money or spending a lot of time in a plane.
Yeah, so a couple things from that is, Nels talked about this a little bit ahead of time, of conferences, a lot of them used to have a partner host university. And so it wasn't even so much about, like, you could pick a place you wanted to go to, like Pittsburgh, but you'd also need a Pittsburgh-based school to, like, be your partner in that. And mm-hmm. problem is, you could really like a location, but if you can't find a school around there under that old model, you kind of had to move on to some other location, right? I mean, assuming...
Yep.
Yeah, there were some issues there.
For sure. And then if I can kind of add on to that, so here's what one of the big pieces I've learned in doing this is that, one, at our size of conference, we are not an overly attractive group. And here's what I mean by that. We have about 300 members, but we require a lot of meeting room space, breakout rooms, banquets, luncheons, you know, vendor areas. We require a large amount of space for a relatively small number of attendees, relatively speaking, if that makes sense. So if I'm a property, I don't know that we're the most attractive, you know, party to come in there for the amount of space that they're going to have to give up. The other thing we run into is our conference is end of October, early November. We like that time slot because it's our membership knows every year that's when it is. There aren't a lot of other conferences going on at that time. We feel like it's a good fit, but it is the start of kind of the tourist season for warm destinations. So we've looked at, give you a couple examples. We've tried Miami, we've tried Nashville, we've tried San Diego. A lot of those locations aren't real excited about bringing a group our size at that time of the year. They know they can either get bigger groups or they can get individuals to pay a lot more than what we are trying to negotiate for room costs for that time of year. So that's another challenge that we run into.
Yeah, even saying that, I'm even thinking for SMA under the old model, it would have been really hard to get a Southeast school host because that's in the heart of football season. It's mm-hmm. like going and having Auburn hosting is probably sounds terrible for Auburn hotels because they want, I don't know, the Georgia home game like that, those weekends to be like sacred for them.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that could be an issue as well. We kind of like that timeline from an experience standpoint. If we go to a major league city, there's a pretty good chance that between basketball and hockey starting up and football still going strong, that there will be some sporting event that people can attend, which is kind of a cool thing. I know that's one thing that NASM probably runs into a little bit, their baseball MLS season, but there isn't always, you know, if there's not a homestand that week, we usually have three or four sports that we can maybe create an event around as well. So that's, it's not at the highest priority, but that's also a little piece of, you know, when we have our events.
The timeline thing is important because I just think of some of the conferences. I know NASM's complain like they're in June, so it's the beginning of like summertime travel, and so they run into some issues there. Theirs is probably more general. You guys bring up like that there's going to be certain locations that are really not amenable because they have like it's the part of their lucrative season. I know SMANS is kind of like right after American Thanksgiving. And so like there's some people like, do I really want to give up my holiday or have to travel across the country potentially on Thanksgiving or stuff like that?
Yep. We actually run into, we tried one year to have our event over Halloween and it killed attendance. And it's because there were a lot of parents that wanted to be home with their kids and spend that time. Not that they're huge Halloween fans, but that's a big deal for kids. And we had members that didn't want to, you know, miss that, especially if you got, you know, little kids, and that's enjoyable. So we've actually intentionally either been the second to last week in October or the first week in November. We intentionally don't schedule around the 31st for that very reason.
Yeah, I can't imagine my four-year-old saying I'm going to miss Halloween. I think he would lose his mind right now.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I have wondered about conferences having a floating date. Like, I know you bring up, like, hey, it's easy. If you know you're an SMA attendee, you always go on this time. It could provide flexibility to go to locations. It could make things easier to maybe some people that can't go to SMA because of when it falls in. Like, is that something that's ever been thought about?
We have. We've talked about it a little bit. We've actually also talked about, we traditionally go Wednesday through Friday. We've talked about starting earlier in the week, or, you know, changing the days as well. I do think one of the things we run into is we try to develop a calendar. Here's when the call for, you know, abstracts is released. Here's when we want people to, you know, we'll let people know by a certain date. And I think people kind of, once they've attended a few times, kind of get that set in their mind that, you know, we're launching our call here any day now, and it will be closed at in 2 months from now. And then we'll let people know if they're, abstract was accepted in early June. I think people get that kind of in their mind. And so if I have a project that I'm working on that I'd like to share, I know the timeline to deal with that. Does that make sense? Whereas if we change it every year, I think people are like, man, when's the due date again? Oh, I don't have a project lined up for that. I need to kind of think about, maybe I'll skip this year because I just don't have something ready to go.
Those are great points, because it isn't just about attending. There's like a long 1 year kind of tail before you get to the conference.
Yep. So I think that's a piece of it. I did want to share though, one other really interesting thing that I kind of learned about is not only are we not necessarily a super attractive event for our size, but the way this process works with hotels, with properties, typically we negotiate room rate price, but once that's set, then that's all on the hotel. The property handles all of that. So anything that goes to paying for rooms, that's the hotel's revenue. Nothing of that goes back to the conference. But every hotel, if you want to book a large group like this, we have to guarantee X number of rooms. And if we don't hit that guarantee, we actually get a financial penalty for not reaching that. So we tell them, here's, you know, we know what we think we're going to draw. We'll usually make that number a little bit lower because we don't want to, you know, put ourselves in a bad position, but we will guarantee X number of room nights. And then they will track that and make sure that people. So one issue we ran into, we tried Vegas 1 year, and luckily for us, it ended up working out. And I'll tell you about our strategy about this maybe a little bit later, but we were worried that a lot of our attendees would book non-conference site hotel rooms. Vegas has a lot of good deals going on, and I get that, and it's a way to save money, particularly if you're a student, but it hurts us because then we don't meet our room night block. And if we don't meet that, we're going to pay a penalty for that. That makes sense.
So what's the creative way to solve that? Because I get it, if you're a student and you can save $200 on a hotel, like, that's a big number.
Yep.
Is that something where you could give a discount if you book, like, a registration discount to book the hotel?
Typically, we do try to find really good rates and negotiate down to something that we think is very attractive. We try to pick venues that make a lot of sense just from location-wise and things to do and those kind of things. The Vegas one was really interesting. We ended up coming up, and I like to think we're sport marketers. Maybe we can figure some of this stuff out a little bit. That conference was actually originally scheduled for 2020, and that conference, we lost that due to the pandemic. The property was kind enough to say, look, if you host it in 2021, we won't charge you any kind of penalties. You can still keep the property. We'll just move everything ahead 1 year. But we were really worried about that side of it. Would people book other rooms? So what we did was actually offer members 2 free nights of hotel. And we ended up chasing down some extra sponsors. And we actually took a little bit of a hit in our reserve, but we were worried about people booking other hotels. And we were worried about coming out of the pandemic, would people be willing to travel as much? And were budgets at universities hit so hard that we couldn't? So we said, hey, we're marketers. what's the value add here? We ate the cost on some hotel. Now we had, you had to register early and there were some stipulations, but we had a lot of people that took advantage of that offer, and that kept our numbers where we needed them to be. So we made it very clear we weren't going to do this every year, but in that particular year, it made a lot of sense to do that.
Now, Nels, go into something you talked about on the top of the show. Like, you have these hotel agreements with the rooms, but what else is the cost that's built in for the conference beyond working with a hotel on the cost or contract that you're signing for the conference?
Yep. One of the big pieces that I just didn't really understand before I started doing this, when you book at this size for an event, you have to commit to a food and beverage agreement. They're going to require that we spend X number of dollars to make the event work. Our event in Tampa this past year, our F&B requirement was $25K. So we had to make sure we spent that amount. They were going to charge us that regardless. So even if we didn't do any event on site, we were going to get charged that amount. So you might as well, you know, have your events. Now, in reality, we actually, for our conference, it's very important that we do provide a lot of value. Our conference typically starts about 1 o'clock on a Wednesday. We provide a reception on Wednesday night. That's essentially a meal. We provide breakfast, lunch, and another reception on Thursday. And then we provide breakfast and lunch on Friday. So an attendee at our event is going to essentially, they could eat all their meals without having to leave the conference. That's really important to us, and that we've tried to incorporate that into our costs. But yeah, that's a huge expense on a contract side that we have to meet. That number is only going up. We are looking right now. I don't know if I should share this or not, but we're going to end up in Phoenix. We're in St. Louis this year, 2024. We're going to be in Phoenix in 2025. Right now, the per person cost for a meal at our Phoenix hotel is $67.
Oof.
That's a big expense that adds up fast. And that's for lunch. Dinner was over 100. So when you consider that's what the hotels are charging, if we want to incorporate any kind of a meal with our event, which we feel is important, that's a pretty big expense.
And it's not just meals too. It's like if you do alcohol or you have like drink tickets, right? Or if you do like snacks like a in
day,
between.
Continental breakfast, those kind of things. Yep. So you have two. One, you have to meet the certain obligation, but two, if we want to provide that for our membership, yeah, that's the price you pay. And it's not just the cost. There's an added gratuity on it. There's an added service fee on top of that. It adds up really quickly. The other one that's really frustrating, but there isn't a lot we've been able to figure out how to handle, is there's an AV cost. And in our conference, every breakout room, you want some kind of projector and screen to be able to share, you know, PowerPoint slides and research presentations. At Tampa, that bill was $20K. I think I broke it down. It's like $65 per person for our attendees just to be able to have AV in the rooms. And if we have a speaker, you want, you know, microphones and speakers and all that kind of setup. That's what these places charge. You can bring in your own people. You can bring in your own equipment. They will charge you a penalty for doing the outside work. You can do it. I don't know that it would save a whole lot of money. Plus now we have to haul our own equipment. We have to set it up. We've made the decision to just let in-house AV run the show because it's a lot easier and a lot less hassle for our executive board to try to manage that.
And those are costs that you think are just going to go up too. Every year you think there's probably going to be an increased expectation or cost there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just not a whole lot you can do about it. Unless you went, now if you went to say a university site, maybe you could do that cheaper on a campus. You can't do it any cheaper at like a convention center or, you know, an arena or something like that. They're all going to have their costs as well. Typically the hotel makes the most sense because you can keep everybody right on site. It's all local, it's all easy to get to. Attendance is better for your sessions and content because people are right there. That's probably the best bet.
I think that's the part that I'm so surprised is why their universities aren't pivoting to help absorb some of this. With the cost going up, it only seems lucrative for the university side. Like, even if the university charged half of that, that seems like a big benefit. If you could bring a conference in, instead of you paying the hotel $45,000, you pay a university $25,000. The university has all the amenities. They have all the AV. They have an on-site caterer. I get that there's some structure about, like, is there a ton of universities that have a designated site that would be able to host 300, 500, 1,000 people? I mean, that's a big question. I'm just surprised universities haven't tried to pivot to fill that hospitality growth area.
Yeah, it's a good question. I do think they probably target maybe more local entities for that. A lot of universities just aren't always looking for these revenue generating opportunities as well. They should be, but it's just not traditionally what higher ed is. So maybe it's not as a popular of option. I'll also point out, you know, a lot of our major universities are not necessarily in major metro areas. You guys are an exception, obviously, at Cincinnati, but you know, there are a lot of places that, is everyone going to be flying to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Iowa City, Iowa? Like, there just aren't, you know, a lot of schools aren't necessarily in the easy places to get to.
Yeah. Now, my listeners, remember that was Dr. Pop that made fun of University of Alabama Iowa City and University of Iowa. So let that sink in. yeah. And I agree of, like, it would go back to the old model of having university hosts, which potentially means you have to lean on more like the University of Tampa's or like a Chicago suburb like North Central College to be a host to go to certain locations, but other locations could be less amenable. Like, UNLV doesn't have a sport management program, or even if they did, are their faculty going to want to do that? Or if they don't, then that means Vegas is off the board. It definitely creates some issues. Now, getting back on track, I know you said you collected data at SMA. Like, what was the impetus behind wanting to do that? Like, why did you guys decide to collect information from members about cost and what people were looking for and all that?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're always trying to make our event better. And I think it's what good researchers do, and particularly in market research, you want to know what your audience is looking for and try to deliver that to them. So that was the primary impetus behind it. We made the decision, this is probably a good example here, a couple years ago of eliminating the traditional poster. And we now ask people to present, if they're accepted for a poster, it's presented in a different fashion, either on a laptop or tablet, or maybe they use some handouts. One of the issues we were hearing from our membership is it is a pain in the butt to try to bring a poster to a conference. You got to get it printed out. You got to fly with it. It's just hard. And then we were running into the problem of a lot of hotels did not want us tacking posters up all over their walls. So then you have to find easels or, you know, some other mechanism to do that. We made the decision to switch. Does everybody like presenting off of a laptop? No, there are some issues with it. And we've learned some things about how to try to set that up a little bit better. But I think overall, our membership was telling us that we're okay with that trade-off, that we get it. It is actually a lot easier to bring a laptop than it is to bring a poster. And we wanted to communicate that with our audience and then let them tell us, you know, is that something you'd be willing to deal with? Obviously, we looked at locations and where people want to be and what kind of experiences they want. So just getting all that kind of information gives us better feedback. You know, what we want to do in the future. I will say one other piece, and I think SMA is probably maybe a little bit unique in this regard. We've really made it a point of emphasis with our conference to, instead of discount pricing, we value add. And we want to give people great experiences. And I think that's kind of become a hallmark of SMA. When we were in Chicago, we took batting practice at Wrigley. Every single attendee got a chance to hit in the cages there if they wanted to. When we were in Indianapolis, we drove Indy cars. When we were in Charlotte, we went to NASCAR Hall of Fame. In Vegas, we went to UFC headquarters. We've tried to create experiences and events for our members to give them a value add, so that when you do spend this kind of money, and we get that it's a lot of money, we want you to have a unique and memorable experience. And that's very important to us. And hey, we're working in sports. Like, we have some kind of sexy opportunities that are out there. We've worked with a lot of partners and tried to have a great relationship with industry. Let's create those possibilities. So we know that, like, when one of our members pays to attend our conference, they're going to get some really cool experiences. We've invited some really cool people to be speakers at our conference. People that believe in research, believe in the academic side of things, but also we've had team presidents, we've had agent heads of agencies that, you know, bring that industry side. And that's really important to us. That isn't always free. Like, we want to make sure that that element is included, but we have to figure out a way to cover that.
One thing I've wondered on the data collection side is, the worry I have is we're collecting data from people that have already decided that the conference is a yes to them. How do we collect data, or how did you, if you already did, like, how can we reach out to the people that are the no's, like, right now? Because I do wonder if someone decides, like, man, I can't afford SMA, then they fall off the membership rolls, and then they might not be involved in that data collection to figure out how to make things more amenable.
I'm glad you brought that up. The first year that we did a survey, that I remember, I think it was after Boston, maybe. We actually looked at our attendees and then looked at our prior year's membership, and we sent a separate survey to anybody who had attended a past, maybe it was like the past three conferences, but didn't attend in Boston. And we asked some of those exact questions, whether it was cost, whether it was location, whether it was, you know, just didn't have a good research project to share at that particular conference, whatever it was. And we tried to collect some of that data. We got some valuable information. I also think at some point you can't make everybody happy all the time. And that's just the reality of it. You know, you pick a location and there's going to be somebody that doesn't like that location. We try to get a better understanding of what people want and what people are asking for, but we know ahead of time there's going to be some complaint about everything we do. This last year in Tampa, we had, because we had to spend X number of dollars on F&B, we actually had a poolside seafood buffet one night, and we got complaints that there wasn't enough, there weren't enough meals given at the event. And I saw people with plates stacked this high of crab legs. It looked like Jameis Winston. And I'm like, come on, we're really coming through here. And some people just weren't happy with it. It's, you're not going to make everybody happy all the time, but I think it is important if there is kind of a large sentiment of how people feel. I think 2011, maybe it was, we went to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Probably a tough location for a lot of our members to get to. And I think we kind of agreed after that, we heard from enough members that said, hey, that's hard to get to. Let's try to find more, you know, bigger metro areas to get to.
I think we can all agree it's probably Dr. Jason Simmons that was complaining about the lack of meals at the SMA. We'll leave it right at that. We don't want Nels to pierce any confidentiality here at all. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's awesome that you guys surveyed after Boston to figure out, like, hey, why you weren't here. It does. The Albuquerque one speaks to me of, like, okay, there was a greater consensus about difficulty of getting to the location. I do wonder if the consensus is building for people, especially at, like, maybe teaching institutions with a little less funding, that cost is going to continue to rise as a number one factor for getting to these. And after our conversation here, it becomes a question of, yeah, I don't know how to solve that. Like, we talked at the top of the show that you go to a big conference like NACTA, which is what, the National Association of College Directors of Athletics.
Yep.
They're a massive conference, thousands and thousands of members. Their hotel negotiations are probably much easier, probably more lucrative, but in the same sense, they're so big that they probably are very restricted on where they can go. But we could go back to the university, but maybe that means less people at the conference because you have to be more competitive because you have a smaller space. I mean, is there any general thoughts here on, like, to conclude with here of what we can do, or if there's anything we can do about conference costs, or what you would recommend for members trying to figure out decisions for them?
Yeah. I mean, on an individual basis, it's tough, and I get it. And we run into, one of the things we found out from our survey is that we have members that have to make a decision between this conference or that conference. They would like to go to both. They just don't have it in the budget. So it's not not feasible. I don't know that there's a ton we can do about it from that side. I do know, you know, I can't remember the last time we actually raised our conference cost for SMA. We've been at the same price point for probably 10 or 12 years.
And we're like registration costs?
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Hotel costs have gone up, but I mean, that's no matter where you would go, that would be the case. What we've done on the SMA side is we've really started, you know, what do we do as sport marketers? We sell sponsorship, and we've really increased our revenue from that side of things to try to make our events more affordable while still keeping our registration costs, keep holding that steady. But yeah, I mean, if you look across the board, not only the NASMs and the SMANs and the NAS and all those places, but also, like you said, NACTA or National Sports Forum, or even, you know, other academic conferences, AMA or whatever, that they're expensive. It's not cheap, and it's tough to get to multiple places. We've made a decision, at least from the SMA side, that we want to really deliver some great value to our attendees and give them a really unique experience. That's what we kind of hang our hat on. So we've decided that we're going to charge a certain price point and deliver that kind of value. If you simply want to present research at a conference, there are probably cheaper alternatives for you, but I don't know that they're going to give you the same kind of industry connections that our members seem to think are important. But that's fine. I mean, it's, you know, different setups for different people, whatever, you know, works for different organizations. I think we've intentionally wanted to provide experiences, and that's what we do. But there are other conferences where they, you know, CSRI is probably a good example. I typically attend that, but they host it on site. It's in Columbia, South Carolina every year at the University of South Carolina. They do a great job hosting it. If you want a unique experience, you're not going to get it there because it's every single year. It's the same thing at that venue. But if you're all about just exchanging of ideas and sharing research, that's a very affordable option for collegiate researchers. Collegiate sport researchers, you know, that we can make that decision. We've intentionally wanted to offer more than that.
No, and that, speaking to that, I feel like when I first started, almost every conference, academic conference, was hosted by a university. And now we've gotten to a point where there is very few. There is CSRI, there is ASMA, which hopefully I won't break news on this. Hopefully it'll be announced before, but ASMA next year hopefully will be hosted here at University of Cincinnati. But that's about it. Everyone, well, I should say, what is it? Sport SEVT is also SEVT, hosted by University of South Carolina. But that's about it. Everything else is gone outside the university system and has like a third party group that's helping negotiate and consider where rates are. So I just, in that sense, it is tough to like, it's tough to argue with that because it obviously seems to be the decision everyone's taking. There must be there must be some science behind that. And I think you've done a good job presenting. Like, hey, here's the challenges. We have a growing membership, but it's not growing big enough that we can really throw our weight around. So we're just within the dynamics and economics that are being presented to us through these hotel contracts.
Yep. And I think like any of your listeners have to consider like, what, why do they attend a conference? Some may go simply to share research. Others go to network. Others go because they want an experience. They want to do something a little bit different. If I'm at the University of Minnesota, maybe late in the, you know, fall, early in the winter, I want to go somewhere warm and experience, you know, do something fun in Florida or Texas or whatever. So, and you're never going to please everybody every time, but I think there's different reasons why people attend, and we try to hit what's important to our members.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Nels. I really appreciate this. I think this has been great information on the conference side.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, Matt.
And just for anyone that didn't hear in the beginning yet, Dr. Nels Popp, he's an associate professor at the University of North Carolina and a ardent Brett Favre fan. So if you want to get nostalgic about any of that, reach out to him. But Nels does some great stuff. He's always been helpful whenever I've needed that. And like I said, this should be a two-parter. So we'll have a follow-up episode that will be kind of providing some of the other maybe ways exploring even some of the stuff we've talked on here to make things a little bit cheaper, whether that's being on university, trying to explore some ways to make it as cheap or as economically efficient as possible. But thanks everybody for listening here on this episode of the State of Sport Management, and we hope you join us for the next one.